This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Last week, southern Wisconsin experienced a rare extreme weather event, the first ever recorded tornado in February. Paired with recent reports that 2023 was the hottest year on record, evidence the rapid progression of climate change has been on a lot of people's minds in the last month. A Wisconsin climate scientist is here to give us the latest on climate news and what it means here in the state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Does the weather we've been having in Wisconsin seem unusual to you? Are things looking different when it comes to snow cover this year in recent years? Ice cover, for that matter? Are you worried about the state of the climate? What questions do you have about how rising global temperatures might affect us here in Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Steve Vavris is the Wisconsin State Climatologist and a senior scientist at the Nelson Institute Center for Climatic Research at UW-Madison. He's also co-director of the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Good to be back.
Before we focus in on the state, Steve, I'm seeing different groups do their reporting on 2023 and the year in climate and heat. It looks like a record year as far back as we trace these things, right?
It was not only a record year globally, but by quite a bit. It was really shocking, especially toward the end of the year, how much warmer than normal we were.
And we hear about that, 1.5 degrees Celsius average as a threshold we're really worried about. Are we dancing around that now?
We sure are. We touched it at times last year. But when we talk about crossing that 1.5 degrees Celsius threshold beyond pre-industrial temperatures, what we're really talking about is a long-term average, not just one especially warm year.
And the hottest years we know about have happened recently?
Oh, it's amazing. The past 10 years have been the 10 warmest years on record globally.
Now, our heat records don't go back, super far in geological terms, Steve, but I've seen some people syncing this up to what we know from geological records. And I'm seeing statements like, as far as we know, we haven't had a year this warm in something on the order of 100,000 plus years. Even in that time span, this is unusual.
Yeah, it needs to be couched, though, in the fact that we have these interglacial warm periods that typically last about 10,000 years, and then we have long glacial periods. 20,000 years ago, Madison was covered in ice, for example, and much of the state was. So we wouldn't expect to be as warm during a glacial period as we are now. But even if we compare, we'd have to go back about 100,000 plus years to find the last warm interglacial period to be anything comparable to today.
Is this what we've been talking about all along here, greenhouse gases causing these warming trends?
Right. So interglacial periods happen naturally, but we are amplifying the warm interglacial that we're in right now because of carbon emissions. And so that's adding to the natural heat that we would ordinarily have. And it's causing the warming to be much more rapid than it would otherwise be. So we definitely know that humans are the cause behind the recent warming trend.
Talking to Steve Vavris, Wisconsin State climatologist, looking at global warming, another record year last year, and what it means for Wisconsin. You could join in with your observations, your questions at 800-642-1234. Steve, we've been talking about the world so far. What has Wisconsin been looking like over the last 10 years in these temperature records?
Well, last year, Wisconsin had its fourth warmest on record, so it wasn't quite as bad as the global heat, but it was close. And it's likely that this is going to go down as the warmest winter on record in Wisconsin. We define or classify winters climatologically from the beginning of December to the end of February. So we still have a good couple of weeks to go in February. But right now we're running so far ahead of any other winter that I think it's likely that this winter will go down as Wisconsin's warmest.
Now, some people might say, warm winter, that doesn't sound so bad. I don't like to be cold. But I know this has lots of ecological impacts when lakes and certain types of ecosystems don't get cold enough. What are you watching for the impact of a warm winter like this?
Right. So there's ecological impacts, there's potentially agricultural impacts, there's certainly economic impacts. The tourism industry in Wisconsin has really been hurt this winter, especially in northern Wisconsin, where normally it's pretty reliable snow cover and ice cover. That hasn't been the case this year. And so resorts, festivals, things that you'd expect to count on for winter in Wisconsin just haven't been able to happen. And that's true not only in our state, but the Great Lakes. Looks like record low ice cover on the Great Lakes as well. Only 3% right now of the Great Lakes is ice covered, much, much lower than normal. And so there's a whole cascade of societal effects when we have weather this unusual.
So we see in the news these global records for 2023, these long-term trends. This news from last week, Steve, this tornado in Wisconsin in February seemed like a punctuation mark. What do you look at when you look at a weird weather event like this? Is this something that climate change could make more common?
I was surprised as anyone by that tornado last week. That really was amazing that we would have tornadoes in Wisconsin, and one of those was pretty substantial, pretty strong, quite damaging. I would say that the tornado last week is not directly a sign of climate change, but it's an indication that Wisconsin's tornado season is probably expanding in a warming climate. So we typically expect tornadoes to happen during the warmer months when we have enough warm and humid air. We don't expect it to happen in February or January, but as we spread that warm season from the spring to the fall into the late winter, and then again in the early winter at the end of the fall, that's when we might be seeing an expression of climate change.
Can you talk about what it is about climate change that's lengthening the potential tornado season? Is it just that, hey, if we're warmer longer, the potential conditions for tornadoes become more likely in different parts of the year?
Right. So the reason why our tornadoes happen in the warmer months, I believe they peak during June, is because we need the right ingredients to form a tornado. And what you need is warm, humid air near the ground and cold air aloft with what we call wind shear, or a change in wind velocity with height. Normally in February, it just isn't warm and humid enough at all to produce enough heat and fuel to create a tornado. That warm, humid air tends to rise and mix, and that's what creates the spin that causes a tornado. Typically, we're never near that warm, but we had record highs in southern Wisconsin last week. It was in the middle 50s, which is so far above normal. And so that created enough fuel with the upper air wind shear to generate those unusual tornadoes.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Bill is with us in Milwaukee. Bill, hi.
Hello. Enjoying the warm weather? Even though I'm a skier, I kind of miss the skiing.
What did you want to bring up, Bill?
In addition, all of this carbon dioxide that we produce, it also, the majority of it, I believe it's over 70% of it, dissolves into the oceans and lakes. And that also increases the acidity of the water, and it reduces the amount of oxygen the water can dissolve for the things that swim around in the lakes and the oceans. And I was wondering how that's impacting the other aspects of it.
Bill, thanks for the call. Steve, is that something you watch for?
It is something that climatologists watch for. Bill is right that roughly about half, I think, of the airborne carbon emissions get absorbed by the oceans and vegetation, and the remainder stays in the atmosphere. So the oceans and vegetation are helping us out. And the caller makes a great point that the acidity of the waters increases as we put more carbon dioxide into them. And this is important when we think about so-called geoengineering solutions to try to reduce the amount of heating of the Earth as we put more carbon emissions into the atmosphere. Even if we can find a geoengineering solution that tempers the warming trend, most of them don't do anything about the acidity problem. The carbon dioxide still goes into the oceans and makes them more acidic. And as the caller explained, that reduces their ability to take up oxygen.
Bill, thanks for that call. We're talking to Steve Vavras, Wisconsin State Climatologist, Senior Scientist at the Nelson Institute Center for Climatic Research at UW-Madison. We're talking about the current state of climate change, how current global temperatures compare to historical trends, what it means for the future of our planet and of our state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What possible consequences of climate change are you concerned about? Do you see changes happening here in Wisconsin? Just two pieces of news I'm seeing over the last couple of days. Birkebeiner, artificial snow, shorter routes. Is that affecting you? Do you tap maple syrup? Did you do it early this year? Many of your maple tapping colleagues have. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our conversation with Steve Vavras, Wisconsin State Climatologist, co-director of the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts, talking about how current global temperatures compare to historical trends, how a warming atmosphere can affect Wisconsin now and down the road. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, maybe your observations, something that looks different in your neck of the woods in recent years as things get warmer. Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Steve, I want to talk to you about your role with the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts. I just briefly mentioned two that I ran into in the news without even really looking for it. People tapping maple syrup a month and a half earlier than usual. Birkebeiner race, not getting the natural snow they need. What kind of things are you watching for when it comes to climate change impacts here in Wisconsin?
Well, you gave a couple of great recent examples, and the undertone of your comments is really about adaptation. We are going to have to adapt to a changing climate, and we're going to need to be creative about it. Creating artificial snow is one way to do it, but it's disruptive and it's expensive, and it's certainly not as good as the natural. Last year, they had plenty of snow for that race. The maple syrup production being so early is really amazing that it's this far ahead of schedule, but the trees don't really know what month it is. What thing that they feel is the temperatures, and we're having spring-like temperatures this early. So we need to be thinking about ways statewide and societal-wise, different sectors on how do we adapt.
Let's bring in a caller at 800-642-1234. Laura is with us in Madison. Laura, hi. What did you want to bring up?
Hi, Rob. I learned recently that the rainforest, preserving the rainforest, is a good way to curb some of our climate change problems. And I also learned that indigenous groups are the ones who are best equipped to preserve the rainforest. And I was just wondering if your guest could comment on that. And I wondered if that would be a good use of our efforts for advocacy against climate change.
Laura, thanks a lot for the call, Steve. A lot of people point toward rainforests as a dense biomass that absorbs a lot of carbon dioxide. How important a part of the puzzle is that?
It's very important. Yeah, it's the potential loss of our global tropical rainforests is really a serious one. And I think the jury is still out on how sensitive they are to climate change. But we know we cannot afford to lose them. And there's some evidence that suggests that it could be a self-reinforcing cycle. That is, if they warm up and dry out too much, then it could just perpetuate itself and we could see a demise of the whole rainforest ecosystem. And of course, that would be extremely damaging for ecological reasons, but also for climatic reasons, because they're really important for affecting weather patterns. So we definitely need to do what we can to preserve our tropical rainforests, even though they're very far away from Wisconsin.
Laura, thanks a lot for the call. Closer to home, Steve, are there things that you look at and say, yeah, Wisconsin could be part of the solution, apart from donating to, say, work with the rainforests?
Right. So there's a couple sort of two-pronged approach when it comes to dealing with climate change. One is mitigation. That is, what ways can we reduce the problem from its source? That is, what can we do to reduce carbon emissions or try to draw down the carbon that's in the atmosphere? The other part of it is adaptation, which I talked about earlier, and that is accepting that there will be some climate change, no matter how much we mitigate it. And in the near term, that's probably the most important thing to do here and now. And so WICI, our Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts, is focused on both of those, but our bread and butter has always been about adaptation. What can we do to cope with the changing climate? What solutions can we foster to help deal with its impacts?
Could you, thanks again for that call. Could you talk a little more about some of the things we might want to start doing now to mitigate, to prepare for the impacts of climate change?
One example is heat waves. We've always had heat waves, right, every summer, regardless of climate change, but they're likely to get worse and they're likely to get more humid and therefore more impactful as the climate warms. And so one of the ways we can adapt is figuring out better ways to cope. Those could be things like adding more trees in urban areas to reduce urban rainfall, urban heat islands, and really preparing for these sorts of things, because there's a lot of evidence that, for instance, when it comes to heat waves and heat wave deaths, there's much that can be done to lower the incidence. And other ways that we can adapt, adjusting our infrastructure, for example, producing a better handling of stormwater runoff as we have larger rainstorms. So all across the board, agriculture, forestry, wildlife, human health, there's all sorts of ways that we can adapt and some tried and true solutions to help us on that path.
Steve Vavris is with us, Wisconsin State climatologist, senior scientist at the Nelson Institute Center for Climatic Research at UW-Madison. Talk about the latest numbers when it comes to climate change, record heat last year, 2023 globally, and how this all affects Wisconsin. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions. That's 800-642-1234. Tom is with us now in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hello. I have a question about a study that just came out in the last couple of days, at least that hit the media, about the Gulf Stream, which doesn't affect directly Wisconsin so much, but this is a worldwide situation. And the Gulf Stream, initially, I followed this for years, we're saying like, oh, no, it's not going to stop. But now the latest one just came out that it is going to almost certainly slow down and stop in the next couple of decades. And that has extreme consequences for Northwest Europe, for being much colder. But even worse, it has the effect on the global south, which didn't really cause this problem that we did in the global north. It'll be much hotter in the south. And so I'd just like your guest to talk about that study and the consequences of it.
Tom, thanks for that call. And Steve, as I understand it, the Gulf Stream, this ocean circulating current with less polar ice, more water, changes the salinity, changes that circulation pattern. And that's our sort of heat regulating system for many places in the world. Have you seen the latest studies on this and the potential impact?
I have seen that study. It's making big news. And so I'm glad the caller brought this up. So the concern is that we have this big global overturning ocean circulation, basically sinking cold, dense waters in high latitudes, upwelling in lower latitudes, and the return flow is the Gulf Stream in the Atlantic. And so that transports heat from the tropics up to high latitudes, and it helps to keep Europe considerably warmer than it otherwise would be. And we've known for years that that overturning circulation cell is vulnerable to climate change. Most climate models project that it would slow down. It sounds like this newer study is projecting more dire consequences of a complete shutdown, which we know has happened in the geologic past, so it's not unprecedented. But the takeaway from this newer study is that it's maybe more consequential and maybe more imminent potentially than some of the other studies. But with all things in science, we need to do more research to get a better handle on that. But for sure, it would have impacts in a big way in Europe, cooling the climate there, but also affecting monsoon circulations, likely to reduce the monsoon rains. And so it would definitely have global repercussions if that takes place.
Thanks for that call, Tom, at 800-642-1234. Steve, I want to talk a little bit more about climate change and its impact on Wisconsin, risks of more extreme drought, but also risks of more extreme localized flooding. I don't know. It seems like it might be easier to mitigate for drought or flooding. How do you get ready for the potential risk of both or either?
That's a great question, Rob. And I think a lot of people were wondering that same thing last year, because Wisconsin saw extreme, if not unprecedented, precipitation variability. We just bounced back and forth from really wet to really dry. We had the wettest winter on record, and then we flipped completely in May and had one of the driest summers on record. And so this back and forth makes it really hard to plan for, especially for agriculture. And so if that really is the direction we're heading in the future, and there's some evidence that suggests that we will be seeing bigger and more abrupt swings from very wet to very dry and back again, that does require different planning than if we're just heading for a wetter climate with more extreme rainfall. So I think last year was a good case study and something we can learn from what worked and what didn't when it came to strong precipitation variations from month to month.
Steve, in just our last minute, what to you in Wisconsin is the most urgent thing we should be doing right now when it comes to getting ready to deal with climate change?
You know, I think it depends on who you are and what sector you're in. Depending if you're a farmer, you have one set of concerns. If you're in a stormwater engineer, you have a different set of concerns. So I think you really have to tailor your approach toward what your interests are and what your responsibilities are. But WICI has an assessment report that came out 2 years ago that's still very much relevant. And I encourage people to look at it, because it does provide not only an assessment of climate change in Wisconsin, but also offers a set of solutions from our 14 working groups, which have experts from across the board, forestry, wildlife, tourism, etc. So that's a great resource that people can use to help us adapt to our changing climate.
Steve, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Rob.
That's Steve Vavras, the Wisconsin State Climatologist and a senior scientist at the Nelson Institute Center for Climatic Research at UW-Madison. He joined us for a look at why 2023 was the warmest year on record, where we stand with the future of climate change, and how it all affects us here in Wisconsin, and how we can prepare for at least some of its impacts. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, it's tax season, and the American tax system has a lot of quirks compared to other countries. We'll ask the question, why are we doing taxes this way? And the Red Cross and other health and medical groups say there's a shortage of donated blood. We'll dig into the latest shortfall and the donation system and how it works in the first place. You can maybe share your experience as a donor along the way. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.